Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork down for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cash and welcome to the Dork Forest. Intros are hard. I have a new album. You should be listening to it. I have a new hour. You could be watching it on YouTube, but I appreciate you listening to this, The Dork Forest. You could go to JackieCasia.com or TheDorkForest.com, and you can listen to it there. You can listen to it on wherever you're listening to it right now. You could watch it on YouTube separately, and that is where Altercation is also streaming. The album is available wherever you listen to any kind of album, and it's also on Bandcamp, which has a bunch of other, some very old Dork Forests that are free on that channel. Otherwise, you should know that the Dork Forest is, I don't have a Patreon, so feel free to donate. If you have $100 a year, I would love $100 a year from everybody. You can hand me a sweaty wad of 20s when you come and see me do stand-up, or you can email me or Venmo me. The email would be PayPal, jackie@jackiecation.com, where you can also email me. And Venmo is just at jackiecation, which is like my Instagram and my TikTok and all the things. And there's merch. There's Dork Forest merch. There's Made of Bees merch. And I don't know. There's so much stuff. I can't remember everything. You're doing vital work by listening to the Dork Short Forest, and I'm glad you are. And I hope you want to hear about somebody's dorkdom, because that's what's going to happen right now.
Okay.
Jackie Cation. Hi, it's me. I'm your head ranger. Rangers of the Dork Forest. Welcome back to the program. You just heard a guy agree. That's right. He yes-anded this show. And that is so good. Beautiful because he's moving to Chicago, home of some real good improv. Do you do any improv?
I do heaps. I would say as well, just while we aren't too deep in it, I use they, them.
Oh, you use a they, them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I apologize. And
it's all good. I didn't tell you.
I can, right. And I can be taught. This is yeah. So they are Tristan J. Miller, by the way. That is the sound mm-hmm. of their voice. Tristan yeah. J. Miller is a comic, and they have a new special out called Manic Impressive. It is on the mm-hmm. YouTube. And if you go to TristanJMiller.com, everything is, you'll find everything. Like their Instagram is at Tristan J. Miller, but the YouTube is Tristan Miller. So there's, go to TristanJMiller.com and go to
yes,
at
please.
Tristan J. Miller, and you will know things and it'll be great. And yeah. you have a podcast called Movies to Fall Asleep To that people talk about their favorite movies to fall asleep to.
Yeah, they're comfort movies. Yeah, it's been a really lovely opportunity to see a bunch of films that I wouldn't necessarily have. For example,
right.
I just watched Troll 2 for the first time. And I saw, yeah, which is like an interesting comfort movie. Another friend of mine is about to talk about Saw, which is not a film I've seen, nor would I find comforting. So it's
no.
like really interesting seeing that.
And
yeah.
your dorkdom is mm-hmm. with a guy who makes mm-hmm. a spooky movie. Well done, creepy
sure,
movie
yeah.
for myself. Mm-hmm. I am creeped out easily. This is what you
oh,
should
yeah.
know. Troll 2 appeals uh-huh. to me. But David Lynch has always made me uncomfortable, though I do like his nonfiction.
Sure.
I like
oh,
I
sure.
like his interviews. I like his mm-hmm. his vibe, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
This type of thing, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so David Lynch is your dorkdom. I don't know anything
yes.
about David Lynch except for some real shallow water here. We're real
sure.
shallow. I think he did Eraserhead. The only
he did
movie
do Eraserhead.
The only movie I tried to make it through that I did not make it through
oh,
was Mulholland Drive.
Mm.
And
that
Twin
one
Peaks
is,
mm-hmm. didn't grab me, though I understand it's wonderful.
It is. I think, I mean, here's the thing. To your, you know, to the point of like, you know him as like a guy and like as a kind of personality and artist first, and then his stuff's kind of secondary. The way I was introduced to him is during lockdown in 2020. He did
okay.
a series of weather reports on his YouTube channel.
Right. He did the weather on the
yeah.
local LA radio for decades, I guess.
Yeah.
Or a
and
decade.
Then he brought it.
Yeah.
yeah. And he brought it back during the lockdown to kind of keep people like, this is the day it is. This is what's going on. Kind of to like kind of reset. And that was my introduction to him. And then I saw like, I think, you know, I saw like Blue Velvet or whatever, and I was like, the nice old man that tells me the weather made this?
Right.
It's crazy. Right. You know? So it was kind of a, it was a big shock, but I really enjoyed him as like a, as a personality far before I really engaged with him, his films. So I hear you there. His films, I will never fault anyone for not enjoying them. You know what I mean? They are difficult.
They're intense.
Yeah, yeah. They're difficult. The only one that I would actually, I think that you would really love, actually, okay, being from the Midwest, being from, you know, Wisconsin, is he made this film for Disney, of all people. It's rated G. It's called The Strait Story. It's about Lyle Strait, who...
Wait a minute. Yeah. I have seen that. The guy on the tractor. The guy, yes, on the lawnmower.
Yeah,
that
that's right.
Drives to see his brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all across the highway. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the same guy. It's crazy. Like, it's such a pleasant movie. And then you have, like a Lost Highway, which is just like a headache on wheels. And then you have watch this guy on a tractor for, you know, 2 hours. And it's this beautiful film and such a like love letter to like that area of America where it's all this beautiful corn. And like, I don't know, I just really, it's such a peaceful film. And in a way that is kind of surprising coming from my boy, David, you know?
Right. That's exactly what I think, mm-hmm, is that it's so, mm-hmm, that it's, he makes me uncomfortable, but I believe he's doing it on purpose. And thus I admire the effort.
Sure. And yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I say this, success without me seeing it. And I mean, because they're, do you know his first film? Do you know his first sort of success?
Yeah, his first film was, well, he had done some in 1973. He was originally a painter, and then a bug got caught on a painting one night, and he thought he saw the painting move, and he's like, oh, I should do a moving painting. Oh, I guess that's a movie. I should go to AFI and pursue film. And then his first movie was Eraserhead. It was in 1977. It took him 5 years to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he kept running out of money. He was at AFI in Los Angeles and he kept running out of money. And so Jack Nance, who plays the titular Eraserhead, had that haircut for 5 years, which God bless. Like, couldn't
that,
be
you know
me.
What that is? That's a guy who wants to be an actor. That's what that guy, yeah, is like. I commit.
Dedication, you know.
What is Eraserhead about? Do you remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a whole video essay about this, actually. It's about pre-parental anxiety and then the anxiety of being a parent. But it is in this sort of obviously kind of acerbic and obtuse way. And my hot take about most of David Lynch's stuff is that most of them are actually comedies. And if you look at them through that lens, they make a little bit more sense. They're definitely like absurd pieces, all of them.
Okay.
And if you, particularly Eraserhead has a lot of, like, it's very uncomfortable. It's very tense, but in that tension, you can find laugh breaks in the same way, like almost like Jack Nance's performance is reminiscent to me of something like Buster Keaton, where it's like a very silent film, sort of awkward kind of thing. But it's about, you know, Henry, played by Jack Nance. He's with this gal and they're not really serious and she gets pregnant and she has the baby and the baby is like a monster. It's like, you know, it's like a puppet.
See,
it's like a puppet. Yeah.
Described like that, I kind of want to see it.
Yeah. Well, it's like really gross looking. And it like is constantly crying. And it's like so clearly like he made it when he was about to have his first kid. And it's so clearly he poured all of that. Like, what if I'm a bad dad? What if I do this? What if I do that? Like, that's so clearly in it. But then obviously there are these, you know, how do you say?
That's
like,
interesting. So he probably started the film before the baby was born. And then the baby was born. And
I think so, yeah.
Well, 5 years gestation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but the, that I would, so how does it, this is a movie from 1973, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Welcome to the spoiler alert
sure,
for a movie that's 100 years old. What does it, is the baby a monster? Does the baby devour their lives? Much like babies are wont to do?
Unfortunately, no. The baby gets very sick and he doesn't know what to do. And he's the baby's in like these wrappings, and he's like, let me see if there's something wrong with this baby. And he opens up the wrapping, and then the baby dies. It's like very sad. It's like not great. It's like, again, I can't fault anyone for going, hey, that sucks, because it does. You know?
Right. You had me at the baby's a monster. You lost me at the baby dies at the end.
Yeah,
that's intense. Yeah.
But since the baby is like quite literally a puppet, it obviously hits different. It's not like, you know, Train Spotting when you see like admittedly a baby doll, but still like an actual like human form.
Deceased. Right. 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 This is clearly in 1973, the graphics on that. I was able, for example, 77, I was a 77. I was able to watch Jaws probably 15 years ago because of how rubber the shark.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
When it is perfectly, because you know how well done everything is now.
Yeah.
And how beautiful. I mean, everything looks like they've really been murdered. Everybody looks like they're really born with like an elbow out of their ear. I mean, I don't need that. I mean, congratulations on your art form, but that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And it always has. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's an unpleasant experience to be sure. Like it's not pleasant. You know, I will say about Jaws, like I recently saw that in the theater because they just did an anniversary screening, and it does look pretty rubbery. But when Robert Shaw gets eaten, I think he sells the hell out of that thing. The performance is great. Yeah.
The acting was so good. One of my favorite, and I digress, of course. One of my favorite things about Jaws is that the way it was written, there are conversations behind the main conversation.
Yes.
Like, so it creates a sense of realism that often doesn't exist in film or television, where somebody takes a phone call, we go right to that phone call, or we go right away from that phone call so that these two people can have a whisper fight or whatever happens. Right. Yeah. And, as opposed to Jaws, where he gets the phone call, they're having a phone conversation up here. You can half hear the conversation in the background. Yeah. It's kind of neat.
100%. Yes. I was struck by that as well when I watched it. There's a lot of overlapping dialogue, and it's a really grounded and believable performances. And there's also like, it's such a silly thing to say, but like, there's just like a lot of subtext, and we don't really get a lot of that these days in films. And it was just like really nice. And then I also rewatched Close Encounters, and there's that similar, like sort of overlapping dialogue, all this stuff going on all the time, because also you're dealing with like children and they don't shut up.
Right.
Unless they're sick and you accidentally kill them, like in Eraserhead. But
right. Oh my gosh. Right. So is there like, here's what I've always assumed about David Lynch is that there is a message in everything he does.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, and sometimes it's, and his discussion of, you know, transcendental meditation and, you know, all of his groovy hippy skippy stuff makes me think, what could his message be in Eraserhead? The baby's going to die? That doesn't sound right. Come on.
No, I mean, well, here's the thing. I mean, I think he would encourage you to simply accept what's in front of you, and then from that you decide of what you will take out of it what you will.
Okay.
And for me, the message of Eraserhead, I would say, is kind of parallels to Anakin Skywalker of all things, where you're like, if you're let your fear consume you, you will accidentally hurt someone. You know, you will commit some sort of familicide, you know.
Okay, yeah, some heinous crime will happen if you're consumed. That's a great message.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful message. Do you think that's it seems sweeping statements, which is what the Dork Forest is about, you guys. Anyway, do you think that's a theme in his work about fear, or just about living in the moment, which is more the weather stuff?
Yeah. I would say, I think a major theme in his work is a lot of his stuff explores like behavior that is bad, like very dark stuff. And I think a major theme of his work, as it relates to kind of what we're talking about now, is there are two forces inside of you, and you have to be very discerning on which instinct to listen to. And, you know, there's often like a conversation of making decisions out of like love and not fear and that sort of stuff. And I think it kind of is in relative to that, because he also uses in many, many, many instances of his work the concept of doubles, where basically there's like a good version of this person and a bad version of this person, but they are also the same person, and kind of holding that within it. And I think there is an element of like, you don't want to give into the fearful, the, you know, negative side of you. And
did he write that thing about the two wolves? He didn't write that.
He didn't, but he should have. You know, inside you, there are two wolves. And, you know, you better believe it, Buster. You got to listen to one of them. And yeah.
I feel sad that I've been waiting 30 seconds to say that. Anyway.
Oh, it's all good. Yeah, no.
That's so great. So, yeah, I don't know. So yeah. What... Is he from Iowa? That's what the straight...
He's not.
Okay.
He was born in Missoula, Montana, and grew up there for a while. Then he lived in Virginia. Then he went to school in Philadelphia, which he hated. And then he went to Los Angeles, and then he lived there until the day he died. Which was only, I think it was last year? Year before.
A year ago January. I looked that year one ago. Up.
Yeah, very sad. Very difficult day for me personally, and a lot of people.
Because of how much you enjoyed his work. And did he work till the end?
He was actively working on a new project, but couldn't get the money for it. And so everyone's really frustrated about that, because he was about to make another TV series. And then no one would give him any money. And then he got sick and then he died.
Right. And he was only, from the look of it, about 75 years old. 76 years old.
I mean, he smoked.
Younger every day. Younger every day. That's all I was going to say.
He smoked every, you know, his entire life. He got emphysema, the fires hit, and that made him take a turn for the worst.
Oh, wow. Yeah, has anyone thought about blaming Karen Bass for that? I'm so sorry. such a dick. I'm over here. Okay,
but
so.
I would say the beautiful thing about that, if I may, just. He reportedly, he died, like I learned TM, Transcendental Meditation, through his foundation, actually. If you have like post-traumatic stress or suffering from mental illness, you can still, the foundation is still going and you can learn for free. And I would highly encourage people to try it. And if it's not for you, that's okay. But it really, again, one of the reasons it hit me so hard is like that really changed my life.
Okay. Yeah.
And the beautiful thing, though, is reportedly he passed away while he was doing his like second meditation of the day, and then he just kind of went. And I was if there's a way to go, that's how you want to do it.
Right. It's like sort of like falling, you know, dying in your sleep to some extent. But meditation, you're very, very present, and you're like, well, I guess I'm gonna go whilst in the midst.
Yeah.
I just looked at a bunch of his. I have seen Dune. I have seen The Straight Story and I have seen Dune.
This is giving the same vibe of like, okay, so hear me out. I have seen exactly three Francis Ford Coppola films, and they are Jack, Tucker, The Man in His Dream, and Megalopolis. And that is it. So it's giving that to me.
Right. Like you never saw Apocalypse Now, or you never saw The Godfather.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I understand, but they just haven't gotten yet around to it yet.
There, yes. Tristan, let me tell you something. The people who tell you that you need to see The Godfather, you've seen The Godfather. It has been hacked so bad. You've seen it. I saw the first Godfather, and at the end of the first Godfather, I was like, I don't need to see any more Godfather. My brothers love The Godfather with the power of the sun. And I was like, I was like, these are not people I want to hang out with for another 2 hours. Yeah.
That was always my thing, is like, this feels like really just like unappealing to me. I don't think I want to see people behave badly. I say that and then I like David's movies, but like, at least his are like weird and kind of funny. But like, it seems like, I don't know.
It's interesting because you do, because with this, the movies that are intense like that, they're not for me, only because I know so many dirtbags. And I'm like, I can't possibly
watch a stand-up comic, no dirtbag? Surely not.
Right. you, a 100-year-old woman who does stand-up comedy for the last 40 years, knows dirtbags? Yes. And I don't watch reality television. I don't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I don't appreciate it. And I don't know mm-hmm. that it can be done well. And mm-hmm. that we can't learn things from it, right?
For sure, yeah.
I mean, there's some people need some fiction to sort of get empathy, to learn mm-hmm. different skills. Like, I know people who watch scary movies because it's cathartic, because they're frightened all the time. This is one of the things I've learned about horror over the years of doing The Dork Forest, mm-hmm. is that sometimes it's cathartic. They're like, everything I've ever been scared of is true.
yeah.
And it kind of releases that energy. And that's one of the reasons why some people love horror.
Yeah.
I am not scared and don't want to be. Yeah. So,
I just talking on that briefly, I really like horror films from like the inventive side of it. You know, I really like I love The Thing, because I think that I actually find that movie quite comforting, because it's like all snowy and it's kind of contained. Kind of like, I also find Misery really comforting, because it's like contained in like a little, and being, you know, being from the Midwest, you're like, oh yes,
right.
You know,
Minnesota.
Exactly. So we're like, it's snowy outside. I'm inside. Yes. Yeah, exactly. But The Thing I love, just because like, it's just interesting to think, but I'm rarely scared by a film. But I find it interesting. I got all that. The only time I really remember being scared by a film is every time I watch Fellowship of the Ring. When the Black Riders are chasing down the hobbits, I get so worked up. And I watched it in the theater a couple of years ago. And I was like, why? I'm feeling really uncomfortable. And then I was like, why am I feeling uncomfortable? Like, oh, I'm scared for my friends.
Yes.
Is how I felt. Whereas like with horror films, you kind of go in knowing, oh, some of these motherfuckers are going to die, you know?
Oh, really? Well, and I never knew that. I thought everybody died. And then I learned about the final girl.
Oh, and, sure.
Sometimes the final girl will live. Mm-hmm. And so to watch a horror film going, well, I hope it's her and not her.
Yeah.
And then I just feel like a mess. Anyway, mm-hmm. but Dune, I saw Dune, yeah. and that was a
Did
big
you like
deal.
It?
I did like it. I only read the first three Dunes, so I, and the whispering was a lot, but I will say the redo of Dune that just mm-hmm. happened was almost shot for shot in many cases.
Oh, yeah.
To that original Dune. Was it 1980? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was 1982, because he did it instead of doing Return of the Jedi, which is fascinating.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah, he's a really good, he has a couple of interview clips where they're like, so you almost did Return of the Jedi. And he goes, yeah, but, you know, George, God bless him, you know, he took me over to the ranch and then he started explaining and goes, this is a Wookiee. And I just started getting the biggest headache. And I said, George, these are your movies. You should do them. But thank right. you. I'm not doing this.
It's fascinating, but, because Star Wars had been so big and Empire was so amazing.
Yeah.
And a Return of the Jedi done by David Lynch, I'm sure is something. Yeah, imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, our mutual friend Joseph Scrimshaw is constantly like, what? Because he is also a big David Lynch fan. And he's like, what if, imagine Emperor Palpatine as done by David Lynch? That would be so scary. You know,
Joseph Scrimshaw has not done the program in many moons. Yeah. And so I got to have him back on, because I'm doing a show with him on Sunday.
Oh, super. Which,
yeah, it's a Star Wars themed show.
Oh,
and
yeah.
On the flyer, he's got a picture of the Enterprise, which
so
is
funny.
Just to drive people mad. Right.
Of course.
But
yeah.
I will probably bring people, which is very funny.
Yeah, you definitely should. I know I spoke with him about being on Movies to Fall Asleep To, and he's about to go into like promo mode for something. So you should absolutely snag him.
Oh, good. By the way, I am speaking with Tristan J. Miller, and they have a new special out called Manic Impressive. And you can go to TristanJMiller.com. You can go to, you can listen to Movies to Fall Asleep To. Many things are happening, and you mm-hmm. can be part of it. There you go.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Like mid ad roll was like, it felt very much like, you know, when Marin would do WTF and he's like, you know, what's bothers me too. Go into the post office to get stamps. Like, and he's like talking about some other part of his life. And then all of a sudden segued. But no,
whenever
I do an ad,
I always do a little sing song thing with, or I try to, I don't every time, sorry, Rangers, but I try to do my ad, I'm about to do an ad and then I do an ad.
That's very good. Yeah. But I really like Dune as well. It got a lot of criticism and it was a bad experience for David because it was the first film he didn't have final cut on, and Dino De Laurentiis chopped the hell out of it. And David was so embarrassed by it that he discredited himself. So if you get it, it's by Alan Smithy, which is the name that directors put on when they're like, I don't want to be associated with this. But I watch it. I'm like, this is fun. It's a fun movie.
It is fun. Did he get to recut it ever?
No. He was really like, I don't want to think about this ever again. Like, I learned my lesson from it, and it's really not what I wanted to do. And what's so sad as well is like the bits that really work in it are phenomenal, particularly all like the design of like the creatures and stuff like that. And you can see why he was drawn to that rather than Return of the Jedi, because Return of the Jedi was so grounded in like, you know, stuff that had come before. Whereas with Dune, so he was like adapting and creating all this stuff. And he was so wonderful at like coming up with ideas and concepts and weird looking stuff, you know?
Right. Do you think it's because he was also a painter, you said?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And he also had read the books. Yeah. He was.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You can still buy some of his paintings. They're really kind of like Francis Bacon sort of adjacent, where they're like, they're kind of what you would expect. They're not exactly pleasant to look at, some of them.
Okay.
but they do speak to a level of discomfort that I think people do have and can be cathartic. There are very few artists that I genuinely believe when they say, well, art is my therapy and I don't really need to go to therapy.
Oh.
And he's kind of the only example that I'm like, I think he was just getting all his shit out and then was like normal because he was like drawing people with their head exploding or whatever, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, because a lot of his art, whether it be film or clearly his paintings, was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And by design, right? Because
I
never saw Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Is how many seasons of it were there?
There are three. That's it. Yeah. The first season's like 5 episodes long because it was like a limited series. And then the other one, I think, is like 20. And then here's the thing. The third season came 25 years later and is like, I think it was Showtime put it on. And the tone is a lot different than when it was on ABC. And it is a lot longer and a lot more challenging. A lot funnier, though, I think, in a lot of ways. But it is like, I wouldn't call it a slog, but it is quite an undertaking.
You enjoyed all the iterations. You enjoyed the first 5 episodes. You enjoyed the second season with the 20 episodes. And then you enjoyed the harder, denser last season.
I would say it definitely, there are things, I enjoyed all of them for different reasons. I would say overall, like that's a series I fall asleep to a lot. It's a comfort, but I only watched the first 2 seasons because like the third is like not pleasant. It's on like Showtime. There's people's heads exploding. There's like a lot of stuff. Lot darker, you know. But it's also a lot funnier because one of the characters is like a slapstick character named Dougie Jones, played by Kyle MacLachlan. He plays 3 characters in that series. It's incredible. And he basically has the body of Dale Cooper, the main guy, but the brain of like a child. So he can't figure out how to like piss. Like it's really broad.
It's very slapsticky kind of
clown.
Do me a favor and tell me what is the first season about? What is Twin Peaks about?
Oh boy, let me just
they just cracked their knuckles, you guys. Tristan, let's see it.
Basically, what it comes down to is there's this special agent from the FBI named Dale Cooper who is assigned to investigate the murder of Laura Palmer, a local teenager, in this town called Twin Peaks, which is up in the Pacific Northwest near the Canadian border, which is why it is of interest to the FBI. And in so doing, investigating the murder, other things come to light that are like, you know, crimes or things that are bad going on. And it's also about a town mourning the loss of someone who was like kind of like a hometown hero in a way. Everyone knew Laura and loved her, and they all knew she was in trouble, and they couldn't or didn't help her. And it's really sad.
Is it a 30? Is it a 60?
How do you mean?
How long is it? Is it like a, is it 45 minutes now? Or is,
I think it's a, I think it's a 42. I think it's a 40, like with commercials, it would have been an hour.
And so it's not necessarily a murder mystery show, and it's not necessarily a comedy, right?
Well, it's like kind of all those things all at once. And it's also a big, you know, I will acknowledge an age difference between the two of us. I'm sure you were aware of Dynasty. It's kind of a parody of that as well. It's like a parody of like a send up of these like daytime, these primetime soap operas. And it's a murder mystery. And then also it's got all this wacky sort of humor to it. So it's like a lot of things. And it was kind of the first TV show to blend all those, like a bunch of different elements together. But initially, they never planned on solving the murder. It was just like something to hang it on. And then Bob Iger, a man who has only made great decisions, he's never made a mistake once in his life, said, well, you gotta solve the murder. And then once they did,
that
viewership
sounds so corporate.
Yeah.
It sounds so corporate to say you have, but it sounds so David Lynch to go, we're never gonna solve this murder.
Yeah, because he didn't think it was really that, like, it was like important, but he was like,
important.
You know, because it's like the thing is to keep the intrigue going and you're exploring all these other things and it's like something to kind of hang on. But yeah, you know, he was just like, yeah, no, we're just not gonna do it. And then Bob was like, you gotta, or, you know, or else, and then they did, and then viewership dwindled, and then
he canceled it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just so fucking annoying. but it's really a fun show. I mean, obviously, there's also like a paranormal, supernatural element. Do you like X-Files at all?
No, I didn't. Which is weird because I should have been the one. Andy really likes X-Files, but he got mad at the end because they clearly didn't have an arc. But what I love about Twin Peaks is that the arc was, no, you don't get to know who did it. Yeah, exactly. I would have watched that and probably been irritated, but at least accepted it, right?
Yes.
Maria Bamford is doing a joke right now about how she's like, so I shake. So she's talking about the bank and trying to deposit checks. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I have this tremor, so it's hard for me to get the picture. And then she does a small voice. So there's like a beat, and then there's a voice, and she goes, oh, thank God she mentioned it. Why does she have that tremor? Is it onset Parkinson's? Yeah. Is she really scared? And then there's another beat, and she goes, you're never going to know. And that is why I would love David Lynch not ever.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane that Iger made him do that. That's not okay.
It is. It's deeply frustrating, and also kind of speaks to his like other, kind of similarly to Dune, where he was like, okay, well, I don't have full control over this thing. But then he, you know, he came back. He went away to, I think, shoot, I can't remember what film, but like kind of in the middle of filming Twin Peaks, he went away and then he came back. And Wild at Heart is what he shot. And everyone's kind of annoyed with him because he's like, it feels like you're not committed to this. He's like, well, I just had to go do something else. But then he came back for the last episode and he really like really fused everything together that they'd made. But yeah, initially they were like, we're never going to solve it. And then Bob made him do it. And consequently as well, there's a Twin Peaks movie, which is tonally very different than the series as well.
Okay.
Because it is a lot darker. Yeah, he did. He made it about the week leading up to the pilot. So it's like the last week of Laura Palmer's life. And so it's not pleasant, you know, because she's about to die and all this stuff.
She's about to die and her life is a mess. But here's the good news. That actress, was it the same actress who played the corpse?
Yeah.
Well, good for that actress.
Yeah, that's her. That was another reason that David was like, I really like working with, what is it, Cheryl Lee is her name, I think. I really want to just do that. I really love Laura. Let me go back and show this. And then also, funnily enough, because it is like a parody of like primetime soap opera, they brought that actress back to play a cousin of Laura who happens to look exactly like her, but in a, you know, like in a black wig, you know, it's like that.
Okay.
Yeah, there's that
so
element
to
it.
He could have directed Days of Our Lives.
100%.
He could have been a soap opera guy his entire life.
But for some reason,
he fell into primetime and movies and Academy Awards. And like everybody. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he also like there's that element of it where it's kind of goofy like that. But then it's also contrasted with this like there's a literal demon, but his name is Bob. So like, what's up with that? You know, his name is Bob. Bob Iger, maybe. But his name is Bob. And he's like the extra, you know, I wouldn't say extra trash, but like he's like a negative force on the town and he's causing all that. So there's that element that's like supernatural and evil, but also like there's a llama in an episode. Like you have to hold those two things in your brain. And I love that as someone, you know, it's actually kind of comes down to like as someone who lives with bipolar disorder, you know, I'm constantly dealing with this, like, you know, the two moods, the, you know, bisection of you and like holding like the negative and the positive and all the stuff and the grays between. And I think that's really important. And I think that's one of the reasons David's art is really challenging is because so much of his stuff is about like, how do you reconcile the fact that good people do bad things and bad people do good things? Like, and it's really tough, but I think it's really important and good to think about that because it's
remember
not
when
so,
Ronald Reagan got shot? You don't. I do. When Ronald Reagan got shot and they were wheeling him in to have the bullet removed, he made jokes and I was infuriated. I was infuriated, I tell you. It's like, this is this shitwit who's taken away everything from everybody, but he's funny? Fuck that guy. I was very angry. I was super angry when bad people are do good things.
Yes.
And so that is that for me. And did he write any books? Did he write the scripts?
Yeah, he wrote a lot of the scripts, most of the scripts. And he also has written two books, one of which he wrote with a partner whose name I don't remember at the moment. But that's a biography / autobiography, which is really interesting because you get chapters from David's perspective of what his life was. And then you get someone who is like objective and going, these are the events as they stand. You know, and it's like you get to compare and contrast.
Yeah.
And the audiobook.
I don't know.
I couldn't begin to like I have a hard time speculating on other people. He wasn't publicly if he did, you know what I mean?
Not publicly and not out as diagnosed as such.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
for sure. There was definitely something going on with him. Like it's one of those things of like he clearly was like mentally strange. I wouldn't say necessarily ill or whatever, but like he was definitely there's something going on with that guy. And I think
he was full on alive. He was like he was alive in such an amazing way with all the different stuff that came out of his brain box. So
like he's definitely like touched, you know, with something, you know, in a beautiful way. And I think about this a lot when it comes to like, you know, artists in general, and particularly when it comes to David, but also I think kind of with like Tarantino as well, who is someone whose work I do not enjoy nearly as much, or whose personality as well, to be frank.
Well, he's a mess, and I wish him only some help.
Yes.
And some peace of mind and serenity. This is what I wish for David, for is it Quentin Tarantino? That's it.
Yes.
Here we go.
But both of those guys, if they hadn't found filmmaking, could have been Ted Kaczynski. You know, they had something in them that they needed to get out, and thank God they found art, you know?
Yeah.
And I think about that sort of stuff a lot. But yeah, he wrote two books, and the other book is called Catching the Big Fish, which is a really easy read, and it's all about transcendental meditation and how it relates to creativity and how art doesn't need to come from suffering. It can convey suffering, but you don't have to suffer to make it, which I think is so important and beautiful, particularly when it comes to people such as ourselves who do comedy, because there is this sort of like sad clown, comedy comes from pain, comedy comes from discomfort. And I have never found that to be the case. I found the most effective comedy comes from joy and the joy of doing it. You right. know, even if you're translating something that was painful, the joy of making it funny is the thing you should be focusing on, you know?
Yes. Some of the greatest comedy is, it comes from, I mean, it, even if it comes from pain or something that was terrible, what you're doing with it is mm-hmm. telling 200 people or whatever that they're not alone.
In some cases, and, on the people on the podcast currently, 20 people. 200 is nice. Must be nice, Jackie.
Oh, to do shows for like 20, for 200. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, pretty sweet. Yeah. Pretty sweet. Yeah.
And, sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. But, you know, because I think about guys like Mitch Hedberg, sure. and who I knew and I loved his stand-up, mm-hmm. but he was a disaster. And it was one of those things where, you know, and I remember talking to him once about, did I talk to him or I imagined this conversation? Who cares?
At this point, it's real. You're in charge.
I'm in charge. He's no rebuttal from Mitch.
Yeah.
It was just talking about how, because I was afraid to stop drinking for a long time mm-hmm. because I thought I wouldn't be funny. Because I thought, you know, the Hemingways of the world and the, you know, you got to party and you got to do this and you got to do that. And what I have found in the journey of me not drinking, because it is a journey for me to not drink. I'm not good at not drinking. So I have to look into it on a regular basis, understood. Why I shouldn't. And mm-hmm. so, but I became funnier just because yeah. there's a clarity to not, but you also have to accept it. And you also have to not live in that fear of yeah. what it's going to be. Because people think when they get help for their mental illness, that mm-hmm. they're like, my mental illness is my art. And you're like, that can't be comfortable.
No. That's a really good way of putting it. It can't be comfortable. Yeah,
that can't be comfortable. And you're going to make other art that yeah. will be better, will be yeah. as good, will be different. Mm-hmm. And you're going to make different art. If you stay in whatever you are in, mm-hmm. that discomfort, your art will change anyway.
Yeah.
So true. You might as well also enjoy your life and have your art change, right? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes me think of two things, one of which is a bit from the special, Watch Out, Here Comes Some Material, which is a friend. No. Mike Kaplan, who I think is a mutual acquaintance of ours, a mutual friend of ours, and he at one point was out on a picnic and he was joking around and they hadn't really got to talking. And at one point he goes, oh, Mike, what do you do? He goes, oh, I'm a professional comedian. I'm sorry. This was professional fun the whole time. I'm sorry. You know, so anytime I'm like, this is a joke I've thought about before. But a friend of mine who was also a comedian, she was having a really hard time. And I had been on medication for a very long time and she was considering getting on antidepressants. And I was like, you should probably just do it. And she goes with tears welling in her eyes. She goes, you know, don't you feel like less funny on it? And I said to her, do you feel particularly funny now? And she's like, they kind of like shook her. She's like, oh, fair enough. I'm like, you're miserable now. The other thing I would definitely argue for is maybe your art gets a little worse, but if you're happier, who gives a fuck?
For sure. And I will say this. There is plateaus mm-hmm. when you're high and plateaus when you're not high. So if exactly. your art gets worse because you've sobered up or taken meds or tried to figure out how not to stab people in the throat, you know, whatever you're doing that is fucking up your life, right? Mm-hmm. And making you miserable and you become less funny. Mm-hmm. It's like the weather in Minnesota, man.
Yeah.
Just wait goes. 20 minutes.
Exactly.
It'll change.
It'll
that
change.
Joke is
yeah.
older than all of us.
I mean, something it is one of those. Yes. I think I'm currently living with my family and I think my father's preheated the oven for a frozen pizza in the other room.
Oh, well, I'm so glad he cooks.
Yeah, yeah. Mom's away at the moment, so it's either him or we starve. No, but yeah, I think it's something particularly in comedy, it is such a like suffering come is the impetus. And I think that, like, how shall I say, David says this really beautiful thing where he talks about Van Gogh. And he goes, a lot of people, you know, look at Van Gogh and go, well, he had such pain and that's why he was like, but when he was painting, that's when he was happy. So he, the making of it is the relief. And so if he was not in pain, he would have been making more paintings, you know?
Right.
And the other big thing that I say a lot is, like, he goes, if you have like a splitting headache and diarrhea and you're throwing up on top of that, how much work are you going to do and how much will you enjoy it?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think about that a lot.
First of all, can I say that your impression of Mike Kaplan was spot on? Congratulations.
Hey, thanks. Thank you very much. And he is someone I've spoken to a lot. Big fan. Love him so much. He's just super.
Timing is perfect. Tone of voice is nailed. Stuck the landing. The German judge has given you a 9.7. Okay.
I really love, also, if you take Mike's voice and then you make it more like less sing-songy, you do actually get Richard Dreyfuss as well. He's like right in that same place. And
okay.
Then if you make him more angry and kind of loonier, you do get Daffy Duck. Like, it's like that same kind of sliding. You're despicable. You know?
Despicable. All right. Yeah. So mm-hmm. What is your favorite? Like, I know that David Lynch mm-hmm. has different genres. Like, he's got the paintings, he's got the film, mm-hmm. he's got the TV, and he's got the books, and he's got the nonfiction, mm-hmm. sort of self-helpy stuff. So what is one of your favorite movies of his?
Oh, sure. My favorite movie of his is Blue Velvet, far and away.
And that is like a sexy times thing, right? That's a sexy one, right?
It's definitely horny, but it's also very scary and bad and like not, but also very, in my estimation, funny. But you have to be, you know, it's not a pleasant story because it is about like a woman being abused by her partner that's like on drugs, played by Dennis Hopper.
Well, that does not sound particularly cheerful, but
no, it's not
funny sometimes or
sometimes. Yeah. Like there's a moment where like just performance wise, everything's kind of so like offbeat, you know, if that makes sense. Like at one point, the film centers on Kyle MacLachlan again, and he plays this character named Jeffrey Beaumont, who is home for the summer from college. And he finds a human ear, which lying in the grass. And that he brings to the police, and then that starts him like doing like basically some sleuthing, and he gets caught up in something he shouldn't, right? But he can't live well enough alone. But the moment where his hands, there's the ear is in a paper bag, and he goes, "I found this ear," and the police detective is like a little skeptical, and he looks in the bag, and then he looks up and goes, "A real human ear," in the funniest way to me. But then obviously you also have these other things in the film which are like deeply unpleasant, like with Isabella Rossellini's character and Dennis Hopper's character, where like you do see Dennis Hopper hit Isabella Rossellini, and that's not great. You also do see Kyle MacLachlan's dong. So if you're interested in that, you know, you can freeze frame.
great.
But there's also these sort of beautiful moments where like Dennis Hopper is singing In Dreams by Roy Orbison, and it is like frightening, but it also is like it's all the things all at once. And I think that's the thing that's most beautiful about David's stuff is like he said, life doesn't make sense, why should movies? And often when I'm like pitching a script or if something happens to me in real life, I'm like, if you said all of these things were happening at once when you're trying to make a movie about this, the note would be pick one thing to focus on.
Right. Right.
You can't have cancer and also your dog dies and also you're moving to Australia. You got to pick one thing or whatever it is.
Right.
But like life isn't like that. And I think David's movies kind of reflect, they're like, there's so much, you know, shit going on and it's funny and it's, you know, romantic mm-hmm. and it's sweeping and it's scary and it's all this stuff all at once.
Right. If you were to write a movie about what's happening right now, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said that, and all I could think was, I am having the time of my life with my husband these days because mm-hmm. I'm home a little bit more often. And so, but we are in the middle of a fascist civil war.
Yeah.
And there is so much horror happening blocks from here. And yet we cuddle. And then we watch a Stanley Tucci show about Italy. And then we go play a board game. But then I lose that board game so bad I get mad. Like, I mean, there's like all the different like weird things that could possibly be happening. And, you know, David Lynch is right to make that movie. Right? It feels like that. But I don't know if I can watch that movie because I feel like I'm living that life. That's so intense, but good for him, man.
Yeah. It's like very challenging pieces of art, you know. And then I would say that is like definitely my favorite because it also kind of, I mean, it opens up with like there's a white picket fence with a beautiful blue sky and then it goes down, you know, the camera pans down and you see all the bugs and the dirt. And like that's also a major theme in all of his stuff is like there's this veneer of American, you know, whatever it is. And then underneath there is, you know, something like Twin Peaks as well. It's this beautiful small town, but this girl dies of like an overdose and is murdered and like, you know, was working as a sex worker and also dealing drugs to across the Canadian border. But she was also like a high school student that everyone loved. So like there's this thing where it's like there's always something else going on underneath, both in terms of like the darkness and the light, you know?
Things are going well. It looks idyllic, but then if you zoom in closer, you'll see this bugs business.
And conversely, if it looks nasty, underneath there's always these little moments of, you know, beauty.
Really? Now, what's an example in one of his movies like that? Is it
I mean, I think, you know, there's, I think, again, sticking with Blue Velvet, there's a sequence where, Dennis Hopper sings Roy Orbison's In Dreams and he is like giving such a beautiful performance and it's clearly stirring something within him. But the character he's playing, Frank Booth, is just so terrible. But there's this moment where he's like, there's clearly something beautiful stirring in his soul. And then I'm trying to think of other instances where it's like, it looks really, you know, again, to bring up Lord of the Rings, there's a moment where Aragorn gets, you know, told that if he was a servant of Sauron, he'd look fairer and feel fouler, whereas he looks foul and feels fair, you know, it's that sort of thing. So I'm trying to think of another instance with that where even the inverse
and you think about in the book all who, you know, because Bilbo wrote the poem, all who wander are not lost, all that is gold does not glitter, and paraphrasing anyway, so that's fascinating.
I think you know, you have to hold both things in your head a lot, and I think that's something that my entire life I've felt that, even when I was like a kid, for whatever reason I had that thing where, you know, I was like, oh well, you know, it all could, I was like 8 and I'm like, well, I could get hit by a bus and go, you better just enjoy it, you know, sort of thing. Even the bad stuff is like at least interesting, you know?
Right. And did he do any other television besides Twin Peaks?
He did a couple of pilots that didn't go. I think it's, I can't remember. I think maybe they got 2 episodes. I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately. But he had this long project called One Saliva Bubble that never popped off. But originally it was a Steve Martin and Martin Short vehicle. And I am so mad that we never got that because that would be my favorite thing.
Right. Because those two guys love each other.
Yeah.
There's, you know, what's interesting is when I look up David Lynch and then you go to movies and shows, you scroll and you keep scrolling. Like that guy was prolific.
Yeah, he was doing a lot of stuff. I think Hotel Room is what I'm thinking of. On the Air. On the Air is what I was thinking about. Yeah. I mean, he also like he did a lot of stuff. As himself, he also appeared in a lot of stuff. My favorite thing about him is he played the bartender on the Cleveland Show.
Oh, weird!
Which is insane. Which is so weird, right? He's why did he do that? And
it's like Fran Lebowitz playing a judge on Law and Order.
What are we doing? Okay, but he's really funny in it. The other thing is like the guy was really funny. And the Cleveland Show obviously is probably the weakest out of like the McFarlane, you know, television shows, but his performance does make me laugh every time I see like a compilation of it. Like he is so silly in that. And they knew how to write for him really well. But yeah, he was in a couple of stuff. He was in like Louis, unfortunately.
Did he do a couple of music documentaries?
Perhaps. I don't think so. I'm not familiar with that. I will say that. But yeah, he also was like in a couple of, you know, he did a couple of documentaries about like TM and stuff.
He was just in the Moby. Yeah.
So gotcha.
My apologies. That that blew my mind very briefly that he was directing. Because I think I can't remember who directed the Fran Lebowitz documentaries that also did.
Marty Scorsese?
Yeah, Scorsese. Also, he directed. It would be like if it went when Scorsese started directing musical documentaries, but for a David Lynch to direct a Duran Duran documentary.
Yeah, that'd be insane.
My mind might actually explode. So
my head would crack as well. I'd be like, when you brought that up, I was like, I am not familiar at all. That would be crazy if that slipped by my radar because I've seen all his feature films and stuff. And like a pretty David, an eraser head, if you will. Like a parrot head, but for David Lynch.
Okay.
You know. But yeah, like I've seen all of his stuff. So that I was like, huh? That'd be crazy. But that makes sense that he's in it. He likes music, or liked it rather. He also has 2-3 musical albums. He made a bunch of music too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, so he sang and played or?
Yeah, he played guitar in kind of a weird where he kind of taught himself and everyone's like, you should play guitar like that, Dave. And he's like, I'm just going to do it anyway. But it's all sort of weird. It's kind of what you would expect. I believe his first album is called Crazy Clown Time. So like he was having some fun.
Right.
But he has a song that I actually really
love.
Nobody
has to buy it. He's just like, I'm going to make an album. If you like it, you knock yourself out. But if you don't, you don't have to.
Yeah. He was really interesting that way. And he actually was a weird sort of footnote in his career is he hopped on the internet so fast. He like had his own website in like 2002. And he like was trying to do like a paid tier, basically a Patreon, what would, you know, be considered that.
Right.
Right away. He's like, I understand. That's when also the weather reports really started again. He was doing it from the radio and then he started doing it for DavidLynch.com. But then he would just put out whatever. And he's like, if you like my stuff, here it is. Kind of to what you were saying, which is what made me think of it.
That's interesting.
Where, yeah, he was like a really early adopter of that. He was early on Twitter as well. He had a very good Twitter account. There's 2 tweets that I think about a lot from him, which is, this weekend, I'm going to see if I'm connected to the moon. And then the next day, I'm pretty sure I'm connected to the moon. It's just like really solid setup, punchline, like really good.
24 hours between.
Yes, and exactly.
That's
so.
That's the gorgeous part of that. That's
really lovely. But yeah, he was just doing all sorts of stuff.
Too. Yeah, I like the business sense that he's like, you have $10. I made a thing. Give me $10. Yeah,
yeah, 100%.
He's not wrong. Yeah,
not at all. And there's something I was gonna say as well. All right, the music. The song I would most recommend is this song called Star Dream Girl that he made. It's got like a really nice backbeat, and it sounds like an actual like rock and roll song. Because some of his songs are like, what am I listening to here? You know, as you might well expect. But that one's like really solid, and I really enjoy it. It's like great driving music.
Did he do drugs, to your knowledge, or?
Here's the thing. He didn't. He was just kind of that way. He's like, I did. I smoked marijuana when I was twice, and he tells this really good story. I'm not going to do the voice the whole time, but he went to go see Bob Dylan, and he got high with his friends, and he was so far away from the stage that he like couldn't comprehend it because he was so high. He's like, this sucks. I hate it. I'm going to leave, and he left the Bob Dylan concert because he just got so high, and he's like, he's so. And he kept just saying to everybody, he goes, he's so small. Bob is so small right now. He's so small. And so he only did it a couple of times. And then he was just like, you know what? I'm good.
It's unnecessary. Yeah. Because for him to have come up with all the things that he came up with completely, like no hallucinogenics, no,
yeah.
Because the guy is a hallucinogenic, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, I like to call TM a psychedelic nap sometimes, you know, because you do, you know, you go in, there's a kind of a, you don't have to sound like I'm hawking something or whatever, but like you go in, there's a nice feeling. And then you like a lot of, you know, you get pretty relaxed and you ideas come to you kind of in the same way when you're kind of like half awake, half asleep, you know, that okay. state where you're like, oh, there's like this weird notion. It kind of feels like that. And I think, you know, he was just doing that. You know, he's doing it twice a day, every day for like, you know, 40, almost 50 years.
Decades? Okay. Wow.
You know?
All right.
You know,
yeah.
You know, maybe that.
Maybe that's it.
Maybe that's it. I would also say this. He like was one of those guys, and I think about this in terms of my own creative practice, is he like basically wore the same thing every day. He ate the same thing every day. So he didn't have to think about that. He could just like, I'm making stuff. Everything else is just like taken care of. And I can just focus on coming up with ideas rather than going, what should I wear? What should I cook? You know, that sort of stuff. He went to, you know, famously Bob's Big Boy every day at 2 p.m. for, I think, 10 years. And he had a milkshake and fries and that and a couple and endless cups of coffee. And that's what he would do. Like,
and that was his breakfast, lunch or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. He would just like get into a routine like that. Yeah. But
fascinating.
Yeah.
I have this to say, Tristan J. Miller, you've been a delight.
Oh, thank you.
We are up. It has happened. We have barely scratched the surface of David Lynch.
Truly.
But it's a nice introduction for me, so I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, Tristan, they have a new special out called Manic Impressive. If you go to TristanJMiller.com, if you go to at Tristan J. Miller on Instagram, you will find out more things. And I hope you have enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for being on the show, Tristan.
Yeah, and happy to. This is great to be on.
Yes, and Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?